Last time I preached, I told a joke, and I'm sorry, but I'm going to repeat that joke because I thought it was a good one, and it leads into what I want to share this morning. Car screeches up outside the Ulster Bank. Guy wearing a stocking over his head leaps out, clutching a gun, rushes into the bank, points it straight at the cashier, and we have a real live cashier just for authenticity, points it at the bank clerk and says, "Give us the money or your geography." And the bank clerk, who's very well educated, says, "Don't you mean history?" And the bank robber says, "Don't change the subject. Give us the money." It went better last time. But I am going to change the subject today because over the last few months, we've had stacks and stacks of theology, revelation, and the theology and the occasional bit of medicine thrown in. We've had physics from Steve. You remember Steve talks about the planets and the wonders of the universe. And we've had maths till it's coming out your fingertails from Andrew. And those who were here on Friday night, we had a pile of statistics about the wonderful mathematics of the universe. Well, I am not a doctor. I am not a theologian. I am not a physicist. And I am not a mathematician. But I am an historian. You've only to look at me. I've got the wrinkles to prove it. But because I'm an historian, I can bring a particular type of approach to the scriptures. So we're going to do some history today. And here's your starter for 10. Shout out the answers if you know the answers to these historical questions. Which is the longest serving king of England? Well, Mark says Queen Victoria, but when I last looked, I think Queen Victoria was a woman and therefore not the king. You are a useless bunch, aren't you? See, no wonder history has been dropped. You don't... George III. Right. Now, Steve will know the answer to this one. Which king allegedly died of a broken heart because he said there were no worlds left to conquer? You were talking about him the other week, Steve. It was Alexander the Great. Very good. One up to the United States. Which king had a grandfather, which English king had a grandfather who could speak only German? George III. Now here's one, especially for the 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth row. Which king conquered more or less the whole of India by 300 BC? Nope. That's the name of a restaurant in the Lisbon Road. It was Chandragupta. Which king talked only to oak trees? George III. You're getting the idea now. Good. Which king rose from the dead? Yes, this time the answer is Jesus. Jesus rose from the dead. But how do you know? How do you know that Jesus rose from the dead? Because we are surrounded, as Mr. Trump tells us, with fake news. Elvis is alive and living on the moon. It's true. It was in the newspapers. It must be true. America never got to the moon. It's a fabrication. It's true, it was in the newspapers. Margaret Thatcher was a man. It's true, it was in the newspapers. And even Facebook is now suggesting that young people should be given instruction in how to tell the difference between what's true and what is fake, because there is so much fake news being circulated around on Facebook. So how do you know? How do you know that what we believe is true? Now, the job of an historian, not the medic, not the physicist or the mathematician, the job of the historian is to look at the past and to work out what happened. And I want to do that today. Because some people seem to think that being a Christian means you have to give your brain a bypass. And they say, well, I've never seen anybody rise from the dead. I've never heard of anybody rise from the dead. Therefore, Jesus couldn't have risen from the dead. Therefore, there must be another explanation for the gospel stories. Couldn't have risen from the dead. Have you ever met? No. Ever heard? No. Well, it couldn't have happened then, could it? Couldn't have risen from the dead. Must be another explanation. Well, if there is another explanation, we've got to try and see where it is in the Gospels, because the Gospels are the source of what we have. And a historian begins with the sources. And all those of you who've done O-level history will know that you have to start with the sources. How do we know what has happened? And, well, let's start with the Gospels then. Well, the answer then, Jesus didn't rise from the dead. Well, the Gospels are obviously unreliable. They're not true. They weren't written at the time, of course. Well, they weren't written at the time. The first Gospel was written after the events it described, but only 30 years. We're not absolutely sure, but the first Gospel was probably written around about 30 years after Jesus died. And the other Gospels, probably a couple of them were written a little bit later, and the last one was written considerably later. But remember this. They're written by people who were there at the time. John was there. Matthew, probably there. And that when they're published, when they're written, there must have been thousands of people around who could have said, oh, that's rubbish. We were alive 30 years ago. That never happened. The Gospels are authentic. And remember, too, this is a society which is one based on the oral tradition. People are used to telling the stories and repeating them. Pastor James read us a psalm this morning, and that psalm talked about some of the past history of Israel, and that's how people remembered. They were used to passing the stories down, not on bits of paper, but orally to one another. And they remembered them and they repeated them. That's why the Psalms are full of the history of Israel, because that's how they remembered things. So it's an oral society. So the sources can be said to be very reliable. And you and I could probably all look back today and remember significant events in our lives. You don't forget big things, do you? You don't forget those big things. You don't forget the tragedy. You don't forget the joy. You don't forget your wedding, if you've had one. Some of us might like to, but you don't. You see, you don't forget the big things. And if somebody rose from the dead in the village, you wouldn't forget that. You really wouldn't forget it. I can remember exactly where I was the day President Kennedy was assassinated. I can remember where I was the day the jihadists flew into the Twin Towers. And Jesus' contemporaries, all these people who were around in the 30 years after Jesus was alive, They wouldn't have. Yeah. So the sources are reliable. Oh, no, they're not. They contradict each other. Well, Mark doesn't agree with Matthew and Luke doesn't agree with John. So the sources must be wrong. They don't agree with each other. Well, now, let me say this. They don't disagree with each other significantly. There are little differences. And to me, that's the mark of their authenticity. You imagine we're all in the village and there's a road accident right outside the church. Leah's at that end of the village. Liz is at that end of the village. Ken Heaney's up on the roof clearing the leaves. And there's an accident. And the police come and take the statements, and Leah says, well, I was a bit far away, but I think there was two or three people there, and one of them was wearing red trousers. And Ken, who was up there and turned around, he didn't see the person with the red trousers. He noticed that he thought there were four people, because he could see somebody who Leah couldn't see because the car door was open. And at the other end of the village, Liz had seen yet another person lying behind the car that neither Ken nor Leah could see. Now, there are little differences depending on where those people were in relation to the event. But the event occurred. The accident took place. So it's not surprising that there are little differences of emphasis and nuance in the gospel. And let me just say this before I finish with the sources. We have better evidence for the resurrection of Jesus Christ than we have for the entire period of English history between the end of the Romans and the arrival of the Normans, and that's nearly 500 years. The written sources for that are less than we have for the resurrection of Jesus. Don't suspend your brains. Okay, so the sources, we can trust them. Now, so, okay, look, we don't believe in the resurrection. We've got to find something must have happened. Well, what are the alternative explanations? Well, some people are so desperate, they certainly were in the 19th century. Andre's not here this morning. Some German scholars in the 19th century came up with the idea, well, the women obviously went to the wrong tomb. Yeah, exactly. You're laughing because it is so far-fetched, but that's how far the world will go to deny the truth that Jesus rose from the dead. Is it likely? Matthew 27 and 60 specifically says this was a new tomb, so it was easily distinguishable. And he also says that Mary sat by it while they actually put Jesus in it. Now, here is the man in whom she's put all her hope. She sees him crucified. She sees him buried. She's sitting by his tomb. And the next morning, she can't remember where he's buried. She goes to the wrong tomb. And what's worse, the men, when the women run back and say, look, the tomb's empty, the men all go to the wrong tomb as well. I mean, it's so realistic, isn't it? The men have gone to the wrong tomb. Now, if it was the wrong tomb, why, when the stories of the resurrection start to circulate, do the authorities simply go to the right tomb and say, sorry, he's in here? They didn't, because they couldn't. So that's one explanation out the window. Now, some others have suggested that somebody else pinched the body. Well, who could that have been? The Romans? Well, why would the Romans have bothered? Pilate had washed his hands of the whole thing, literally. He didn't want anything to do with it. It certainly wasn't the normal practice to put a crucified person into a tomb and then pinch the body. Most of the Roman executions, they'd left the bodies hanging as a deterrent to other people. And again, if the Romans had pinched it, it would have been the easiest thing in the world to produce the body once the stories of the resurrection started to circulate. Or perhaps it was the disciples took it then. That's what the Jewish leaders were afraid of, because in Matthew 27 and 84, it says, we're frightened that the disciples will take the body, and they asked Pilate, therefore, to get the tomb sealed and guarded. Now, to seal the tomb, if the Romans to seal the tomb meant they actually physically put a seal on it, and they put soldiers on the door. But they paid the Roman soldiers to put that story around after the resurrection. The disciples stole the body. Now here we have a group of dispirited men, completely shattered because all their hopes have gone. They've seen Jesus hung on the cross, the one in whom they put all their hopes. They were so frightened that they even deny that they knew him. They're cowering away, as Paul reminded us at the start. They're terrified. But here they are. They're going to organize a raid on a tomb, take on professional soldiers. And what are they going to do with the soldiers when they get there? They're going to kill them? Not a very good idea, I suggest, because all the authority of Rome would have come down on their heads. Perhaps the soldiers ran away when they saw this band of fierce warriors, terrified and trembling, coming towards them. Well, if the Roman soldiers had run away, do you know what the penalty for desertion was in the Roman army? You were stripped. They started a fire with your uniform, and they put you on the fire. Now, you do not run away if you think that's the fate that is facing you. And the other mystery, if the disciples had taken the body, why on earth, when the women come back and say, he's gone, why do the disciples then go to the tomb? They know it's empty. They know where the body is. Don't think so. Don't think the disciples have got him, do you? And when they get to the tomb, they've got to roll the stone away, put the body somewhere, and then, very logically, they start these false stories that Jesus has risen from the dead. And they start these false stories, and they are prepared to die for them. Now, we know that people are prepared to die for causes. Anybody who's lived in Northern Ireland for the last 40 years, people have died for a united Ireland or to stop a united Ireland. People are blowing themselves up in the world today because of an expectation of what they might get in the future. So we know that people are prepared to lay down their lives, but would you lay down your life for a lie? Sorry, what did I say? Oh, sorry. I just wanted to make sure you were listening, Alan. Would you start a lie and then be prepared to die for it? I mean, it's so logical, isn't it? I mean, we've seen all over the world, we see people dying for lies. No. Not for one they've started and that they know isn't true. And in fact, Thomas didn't even believe the lie at all. All right, so I don't think the disciples got it. So the Jewish authorities have got it. The Jews pinched the body. Well, again, easiest thing, the minute the stories of the resurrection start circulating, produce the body. End of story. They were determined to snuff out the Christian church. Why didn't they produce the body? Because they didn't have it. They couldn't produce it. This is getting a bit puzzling, this, isn't it? So nobody, doesn't seem likely anybody's got the... I know what the answer is. He wasn't dead at all. He wasn't dead. He's been scourged. Now, in the British Navy in the 18th century, the common punishment was to flog mutinous sailors. Now, a flogging would mean that you were strapped up against ship's wheel, usually, shirt taken off, and you were flogged with a cat of nine tails. That's a whip with nine tails on it. 40 lashes of that would leave you pretty bad. And it was not unknown for people to die from that. In fact, it was quite common. Now, Jesus was not flogged like that. He was scourged. Now, same idea, a lot of tails on the whip, but knotted into the whip are bits of bone and metal and stone. So that when you get flogged, it knocks great chunks out of your back. And those of you who've seen the Jesus movie, that's portrayed so graphically. You can actually see the bits coming off of Jesus' back when he's being scourged. Now, I'm not a medical man, as I've said, but you know, you have 40 or 50 of those pounded into your back. Leaves you feeling fairly fit, I'm sure. He was too weak to carry the cross. Somebody had to be recruited to carry the cross. He's then, after having been scourged, nails driven through hands and feet, hung on the cross. And the point about hanging on a cross, as if you think about it, is that you suffocate because all the pressure on your lungs can't expand and you can't breathe. So he goes through all of that. And the Roman soldier who had seen plenty of crucifixions, experienced guys these, they had no doubt he was dead. That's why they didn't break his legs, that's what it says. They break the legs if you're still alive, but he was dead, so they didn't break Jesus' legs. But let's assume for the moment he's not dead. He survived the scourging, he survived hanging on the cross, having nails put through his hands and his feet. He's now put into a cold tomb. Just the thing for somebody in physical danger, put in a cold tomb. He's bound in strips. John says he has the spices put around them. Now, I don't know if you know anything about the contemporary practice of embalming, but it's 100 pounds weight of spice. That's 7 stones of spices wrapped into the bandage. Now, some of us have difficulty getting up, but now you've got bandages, you've got an extra 7 stones, 100 pounds of spices, it says in Scripture. And here's this man who has gone through all this physical suffering. And he fights his way, despite the fact of all the injuries, he fights his way out of 100 pounds of spices and bandages. And I think, you know, if you and I were struggling to get out, you know, I don't know what your bed looks like in the morning, but when I'm struggling to get out of my bed, the quilt and everything is sort of rather disheveled. The clothes, when the disciples find them, they're lying there just as they were wrapped around him. And it says the headscarf was neatly folded. Well, that doesn't sound to me like somebody who has struggled physically to get out of those clothes. Something more has gone on there. And then, having gone through all that physical suffering, having fought his way out of all the grave clothes, he then rolls away a stone from the inside, which has probably been put in place by using a lever, because it probably weighs, this would be the normal practice, it probably weighs about a ton. He wasn't dead? I don't think so. So what happened? Gospels are reliable. Women didn't go to the wrong tomb. No reason for the Romans to have the body. No reason for the Jews to have it. Disciples. Seems as if Jesus pretty much must have been dead. Sherlock Holmes is the answer. Sherlock Holmes, Conan Doyle, the writer, has Sherlock Holmes, his fictional detective, saying this. The key to his success as a detective. When you have ruled out all the logical explanations, whatever is left, no matter how unlikely it seems, must be what happened. When you have ruled out all the possible explanations, whatever is left, no matter how unlikely it seems, must be the explanation. We've looked at the possible explanations as to what happened. We've ruled them out. You see, and the world so often starts at the wrong place when it's thinking about Christianity. You know, we have people explaining away the creation in wonderful terms with the selfish gene and all this other stuff that I can't begin to understand. And they get wrapped up on, God couldn't have created the world because it's all evolution and all of this stuff, and I don't understand that. But you see, they're starting at the wrong end. We need to start with Jesus. Because as Steve Mitchell just said, without Jesus, there's nothing. We must start. Jesus was a figure in history, not a myth, not a dreamed up idea, a physical human being who was also God. And people say that, well, look, you lot believe in the resurrection. You've put aside your rational minds. I want to turn that round and say, no, you're the ones who put aside your rational mind because there is no other logical explanation for what happened on Easter Day other than the fact that Jesus rose from the dead. None of the other explanations will bear any strength. They don't make any sense logically, scientifically, historically, or psychologically. And that's why I can say, yeah, I don't have to put my brain to death to be a Christian. In fact, I think people who aren't Christians are putting their brains to death, to be honest. Because I think what the Bible says about man and his sinful nature is also patently obvious if you study history. So Jesus did rise from the dead on the first Easter day. And as Paul says, the apostle, not this one, as Paul says, if he didn't, then we are of all men most miserable. And that's what Steve was saying. Without the resurrection, there is no point. It's what makes our faith unique because it rests on something that actually happened in history. And come here, there's more. Who was that used to do that? Jimmy Cricket, yeah, there's more. Sorry for those who've never heard of Jimmy Cricket. Because Jesus rose from the dead, I can believe everything he said about himself. And one of the things he said, and one of the things that was said to the disciples, almost one of the last things that the Gospels record that was said to the disciples, is that this same Jesus, who you see now departing into heaven, will come again. Now, I have to say, with all the news that we've had this week about the world teetering on the brink of World War III and all the rest of it, all I can say is, I am jolly glad that Jesus is coming back again. Amen.